ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Canto 5, text 13, the further talks between King Rahuga and Chad Bharata, text number 9 this morning. Kvachin Nigirno Ajagarahina Jano Navaiti Kinchit Vipune Apavidaha Dashtaha Sma Shete Kva Cha Danda Shukai Ando Andakupe Potitas Tamisre Kvachin Nigirno Jagarahina Jano
Kvachin
Nigirno Jagarahina Jano Navaiti Kinchit Vipune Pavidaha Dashta smashete kocha danda shukta Andonda kutte kotita stadisre
We have trouble seeing how sure that there's a book here. You may have trouble looking, seeing from there.
Vachin nigirno jagarahina jano na vai kikinchit ipune pavidjaha Dashta smashite kocha danda shukta Andhum dakutte putitasta vishre
Andhum dakutte putitasta vishre
Vachin nigirno jagarahina jano Navaiti kinchit vipune pavidaha
Navaiti kinchit vipune pavidaha
Dashta smashite kvacha danda shukta
Dashta smashite kvacha danda shukta
Andhum dakutte patitasta misre
Andhum dakutte patitasta misre
Kachin nigirno jagarahina jano Navaiti kinchit vipune palita
Tasta smatim chete kvata danda sukhaye
Tasta chete kvata danda sukhaye
Ando dakute patitasta misre
Andhom dakute patitasta misre Vachin nigirno jagarahina jano
Navaiti kinchit
vipune pavidaha
Dashta smashite
Dashtashmashite kvacha danda shukai Anhunda kukye pati pasta nise Kvachit Sometimes Nigirnaha Being swallowed, Ajagara, Ahina, by the great snake, known as the python. You know what the python is? The one squeezes you to death, right? Janaha, the conditioned soul. Na. Not.
No.
Avayuti understands kinchit anything within a in the forest. Apavidaha pierced by arrows of suffering. Dashtaha being bitten.
Sma,
indeed, Shete,
lies down.
Kvacha, sometimes,
Dandashukai,
by other kinds of snakes, Andha, blind. Andakupe, in a blind well. Potitaha, fallen. Tamisre, in a hellish condition of life. That is so sad. Translation. The conditioned soul in the material forest is sometimes swallowed by a python or crushed. At such a time, he is left lying in the forest like a dead person, devoid of consciousness and knowledge. Sometimes other poisonous snakes bite him. Being blind to his consciousness, he falls down into a dark well of hellish life, with no hope of being rescued. Srila Prabhupada's report. When one becomes unconscious due to being bitten by a snake, one cannot understand what is taking place outside his body. The unconscious condition is the condition of deep sleep. Similarly, the conditioned soul is actually sleeping on the lap of the illusory energy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Kuta Nidra Yao Maya Pishcharya Kule, O living entity, how long will you sleep in this condition on the lap of the illusory energy? People do not understand that they are actually sleeping in this material world, being devoid of knowledge of spiritual life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says, Enechi aushadi maya nashi bharadadi harinama mahamantra laudhi mahadi. I have brought medicine to awaken every living being from perpetual sleep. Please receive the holy name of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and awaken. The Katha Upanishad 1.3.14 also says, Uttishya Jagrata Prapya Varam Nibodhata. O living entity, you are asleep, you are sleeping in this material world. Please get up and take advantage of your human form of life. The sleeping condition means loss of all knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita 2.69, it is also said, Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagarti samyani. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. Even in the higher planets, everyone is under the spell of the illusory energy. No one is really interested in the real values of life. The sleeping condition called Kala Sarpa, the time factor, Sakala Sarpa, literally the snake of time, the time factor, keeps the conditioned soul in a state of ignorance. And therefore, pure consciousness is lost. In the forest, there are many blind wells. And if one falls down in one, there's no chance of being rescued. In a state of sleep, one remains perpetually bitten by some animals, especially snakes. Maham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Hiramani Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivishesha Srinivari Pascha Deve Sitarani Omo Gyana Chimaran Dasya Garanjana Shalakaya Chatsu Vimri Chumjain Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Rudyas Chakrita Sindhu Bheva Chakratitana Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Okay, so now in the material forest, the conditioned soul has the misfortune of encountering snakes. The python is the one that wraps around, and as you inhale, he squeezes, you can't, so gradually you can't breathe anymore. And then he swallows you. Sometimes also snakes bite you, and then poison makes you unconscious. In any case, left lying in the forest like a dead person, devoid of consciousness and knowledge. He does not understand anything. Jana na avaiti kinchit. So this way, he's being bitten by other snakes and therefore always in suffering in this way. And this way, this is very nice here. Anda kute patita. Blind, fallen, blind in a blind well, under kupe. Tanishra, in Tanishra. One of the hellish planets is called Under Tanishra, the dark well. We discussed yesterday, blind well means a well that you can't see. Its opening is covered over, like there's an eye that's closed. So it's dried up well, and its opening is covered over, and you can't see it either, and you fall into it. It's bitter dangerous. I know a devotee who had this experience in India. He was with a group of devotees traveling around, and he wandered off somewhere in the night and fell into one of these abandoned wells. He had to give a description of what he went through. He was broken bones, and couldn't move, and trying to call out. Nobody could hear him. And he was there for quite some time. I don't remember the details. But finally, somebody stumbled across him, heard him or something, and hauled him out of the well. That was the beginning of the suffering. It's really quite a hopeless experience. because if you've ever been through this, you don't know if you'll ever get out. And so you don't know that you'll ever be rescued, and you just stay in there. There's no food, no water. No water. 1 week you're dead. He couldn't get out. He could hit himself, I think he hurt too badly to practically move. So this is, what does this stand for? This unconscious condition. The unconscious condition is a condition of deep sleep. There are three stages of consciousness: waking, dreaming sleep, and deep dreamless sleep. So, in that deep dreamless sleep, consciousness doesn't seem to be active at all. But when you're dreaming, something is happening. The similarly, the conditioned soul is actually sleeping on the lap of the illusory energy. Quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur's famous song, sleeping in this condition, the lap of the illusory energy, who here like a witch. Witch means you cast a spell. You know, you do something magical and you lose your real awareness. So, nidra, sleeping, maya, this jaya, the lap of this of maya. So then Prabhupada says, people do not understand that they are actually sleeping in this material world. Although they are awake, they are asleep. So this is the condition. You have been bitten by this python, which is also, he says, the Kala Sarpa, the snake of time. And so they do not know that they are actually sleeping in this material world, being devoid of knowledge of spiritual life. Sometimes people are not very conscious, and they go through life. And, well, there was a book written by a former president of the United States, Ronald Reagan, who seemed to be not very aware of what was going on around him many times. And the title of this book was Sleepwalking Through History. Sleepwalking through history. He had people around him and giving his lines to read. He agreed them. And so it said, I don't know what the truth of the matter is, but anyway, that was the book, Sleepwalking Through History. People like, you know, sometimes when people are asleep, they get up and walk around. It's just sleepwalking. So everyone is unconscious. In Krishna consciousness, really is about waking up. It's the expansion of consciousness. Of course, if we have no experience of expanded consciousness, then we think we're alert, we know what's everything happening around. But if we get the experience of an expanded consciousness, then suddenly you look back and say, I thought this was real, but it was just a dream. It's like waking up from a dream. While you're dreaming, you're usually not aware you're dreaming. You take it as reality, but as soon as you wake up, you know this was not real. It was insubstantial. So actually everyone is sleeping in this material world. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. They don't really know what's happening. We've already discussed how people are almost by force unconscious. They make themselves unconscious in order to be enjoyers in the world. Otherwise, the python is there, swallowing us up, the snake of time, the Kala Sarpa. We don't want to pay any attention to it. Many devotees became very excited about this movie that came out. There's a series of them. What was it called? The Matrix. The Matrix. because I'm pure going to talk about Krishna consciousness. Because these people were, they were, I don't know, they were, anyway, some kind of cyber machines had taken over the world. Computers had become so powerful. And for some reason that doesn't bear looking into, they were using human beings as batteries. So human beings were in some kind of pots or something, and all things going in and out of them, and just being used as batteries. But meanwhile, to keep them alive, they had this, there was a matrix which was an illusory reality that everybody was living in. And it looked like real reality, but every so often, but it was actually just virtual reality. Obviously, this must be based on the experience of getting intensely involved in computer games. So it's like that. There's some truth to this idea that the world we see is a virtual reality. Sadhguru wrote a book some time ago about using the analogy of virtual reality to explain Maya before this Matrix movie came out. Virtual reality. It seems like reality. It's not, people are absorbed in it. And they don't know who they are. It's not some machines that take it over doing this. It's just the nature of Maya. The thing is, when we want to forget Krishna, we should think about this. We are here because of forgetting Krishna. Krishna Bahir Mukhi, turning our faces away from Krishna. Well, who is Krishna? Well, Krishna is the ultimate source of all energies, but all these energies are also a form of Krishna. There's nothing but Sri Krishna. So that means a denial of Krishna is a denial of reality. In other words, when one wants to forget Krishna, basically you have to forget everything. You don't, not only do you not know who Krishna is, you don't know who you are. You don't know what this world is. The whole thing is, you're in denial, complete, chosen to turn away from Krishna. How is it possible to do that? Well, Krishna has this place where you can forget him. In one sense, when you turn away from Krishna, everywhere you go, Krishna is there. It's not possible, in one sense, to turn away from Krishna. But Krishna gives the facility to forget him if you want. So the place where that's possible, the energy in which that's possible, is called the illusory energy. So that's where we are for forgetting Krishna. As soon as one wakes up, then we see things as they are. We see Krishna everywhere. We see everything situated in Krishna. We understand. This is called sambandha jnana, knowledge of relationships. And this means not only knowing who God is and our relationship with God, but also everything else. It means we understand what is spirit. We see spirit. We see what matter is. And also we see what is the controller of both. This is sambandha jnana. So, of course, here, because of our conditioned life, we've been so long taking the illusion for the reality, it's a little hard to wake up, especially if we're a little reluctant. We like our dreams. Don't disturb my illusions. Because of our investment in this illusion, we don't want to be disillusioned. But on a disillusionment, if it's awakening into a truth, it's a far, far better thing. So it's Mahaprabhu, I have brought the medicine to wake every living entity from perpetual sleep, the endless sleep, the big sleep. I'm going to give you this medicine that will wake you from your unconscious state. Of course, in India, there are still people who, if somebody is bitten by a snake and they've come unconscious, that person can chant mantras in the ear and then they recover. I haven't seen it myself, but I know devotees who have seen it, they're totally amazed that they can do this, but this mantra. Here, he brought the medicine, Oshadi, the herb, that will wake us up. What is that medicine? Harinama Mahamantra. It's the sound, it's the key. This mantra comes from outside the illusory system and comes down inside, and then can, when it's chanted, then it starts to wake us up and dissolves the illusion. So this Prabhupada is showing how this metaphor is used. Katupana Utishta, wake up, get up, arise, Utishta, living entity, and become conscious and take advantage of your human life. There's loss of knowledge. Prabhupada cites this Bhagavad Gita verse, which is really an extraordinary verse. Bhagavad Gita 2:69. This very interesting verse in many ways. Yānisha sarva-bhūtanam. What is night? Nisha. For all living beings, sarva-bhūtanam. In that night, Jagarti Samyami, the self-control of the sage, we've been discussing in the Bhagavad Gita the Stita D Muni, the Stita Prajna Muni, the alert person, the person who knows. That person, he's awake. What is night for all living beings? That person is awake. Yasyam jarati bhutani, and that condition in which all living beings are awake to this Pashatahuni, the sage who sees, it's night. In other words, here, you can see that when devotees are what they are alert and interesting in, here in the Krishna temple, we're hearing and chanting about Krishna, we're worshipping the deities. But a person dedicated to sense gratification comes here and he says, there's nothing happening. There's nothing going on. One time, I had occasion to describe to somebody the four regular principles. And when I was finished, the guy was astonished. He says, what do you do? He just couldn't imagine any life outside of this. So whatever the devotees see or are interested in or are looking at, everybody else, they're asleep. And conversely, when all everybody else is awake and alert, the devotee sees, now there's nothing here. They're in the darkness of ignorance. It's just darkness. You're a devotee who's interested in Krishna consciousness or walks into some gambling casino where everybody's playing poker and he says, there's nothing here. Can we just leave? There's nothing going on. It's all useless. So it's the difference between day and night. What is night for all beings is the time of waking for the self-control. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. Then the interesting little purport, because Prabhupada begins by saying there are two classes of intelligent men. Notice the use of this word intelligent. This is really, he's talking about buddhi. This is why buddhi is above the mind. If one is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification, you see, that person's whole mindset, the whole way of seeing is simply sense gratification. Happiness means sense gratification by definition. And so this person, that's his direction of his intelligence. So his thinking, feeling, and willing, what the mind does, are all thinking, feeling, and willing in terms of sense gratification. The mind accepts and rejects, whatever is favorable to sense gratification I take, and whatever is against sense gratification I let it go. But his intelligence, the buddhi, is fixed on sense gratification. You see, if people go into a room, we may all be sitting in the same room, but because of our intelligence, we may really see different things. Because before you even perceive, there's other thing that happens. What attracts you? You can't see everything. There's too much. And everything you see is already characterized by name and form. It's already... Yes, you got to put them on. So if you go into a room, what do you notice and what do you not notice? What attracts your attention? What doesn't attract your attention? What is interesting and what is not interesting? You see, I mean, this determines what you see before you've even seen it. So those kinds of things is intelligence. The whole framework by which all your perceptions take place. So one is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification, and the other is introspective. He looks inside and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage is introspection, or looking inside, means inquiry into the self. I mean, atma tattva. Who am I? These kind of things. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. They just can't see it. They just can't understand what it's all about. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic men. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture. That's our pleasure. Our advancement in Krishna, seeing ourselves advance in Krishna consciousness and seeing others advance in Krishna consciousness. We need to be happy, we need to feel pleasure, and this is what we do. If my Krishna consciousness is increasing, this is what I take pleasure in. Other people have no idea of this happiness. And in fact, sense gratification makes them unable to have spiritual experiences. The capacity for the experience of the self and the experience of God is there in us. We are made for interactions with the Lord. This is what our senses are for. This is what our minds are for. Remember, these senses belong to the living entity as a spiritual being. That's what they're originally meant for. But when the senses become engaged in sense gratification, and the mind becomes engaged in sense gratification, they lose their ability to see spirit. This is called falling asleep. Therefore, atasi Krishna namadi nabhavetrayam indriya. In this condition, we cannot perceive Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, and his pastimes. Namadi. These things cannot be grasped by our instruments of knowledge and action. Therefore, Krishna is inaccessible. We cannot his name. Those people who are in this condition and try to understand the absolute truth, they always come up with emptiness or nirvishesha or shunyavadi, because their senses can't go there. And they say, well, it's something out there, there's something big out there, there's something important out there, but all we can say is it has no name, has no form, has no relationships, because none of this, they don't go there. But the next line, Sevan Mukhe Hi Jivhato Swayam Evas Pranachita. However, when the senses beginning with the tongue are engaged in the service, Swayamevas Pranachita, then they become enabled or re-enabled to perceive Krishna as their original state. They wake up. The real senses wake up. So our senses are made for seeing Krishna. It's just like you have a pair of glasses so you can see. But somehow or other, they become covered with mud or paint or something and scratched and you can't see. But when they're clean, then again vision comes. All our senses are this is what they're for. They're for perceiving, for knowing Krishna. And so when those senses waken up, then Krishna becomes visible. It's not that we have this. That's why Prabhupada calls this the science. It's the capacity for using our senses. But as long as the senses are engaged in sense gratification, to that extent, Krishna will not be visible. It will not be possible to even conceive of anything. So that's why we stress upon these regular principles of cleansing the senses, not being engaged in sense gratification. People don't understand. Everywhere you see, in every religious tradition, there are rules and regulations like this. And people don't know why they're there anymore. They just think God is some nasty old guy that doesn't want to have anybody to have fun. But it's true. All sense gratification leads to misery. Veda dukkatma kama. Because our real happiness and our real ourself, it all becomes forgotten, and we just become like this snake bit person, lying unconscious, and not having a life. People are not even living their own lives. Prabhupada mentioned once that in Krishna consciousness you live, he says one lives every moment with a thrill. There's never a dull moment. Everything is always interesting all the time. But of course, people think that spiritual life is boredom. They just can't see what's going on. These people must be just gotten a taste for boredom. Somehow it's not exciting. You have to ride fast in cars and so on. So this is we should understand this. The senses are meant for enjoying Krishna. When they're used for the purpose of sense gratification, our senses lose their capacity to perceive Krishna. When they're like purified and engaged in Krishna service or devotional service, that capacity returns. At that point, it's not like, do I believe in God? Not a question of believing in God. It's that, do I believe in my existence and something there? Because what everything that is Krishna. It's not a question of faith, it's a question of just immediate perception all the time. It's inconceivable that God should not exist. This is because we just see what's there and see the relationship with everything. And so people have built these huge structures, and what they enjoy, Prabhupada calls Maya Sukha. Not Prabhupada, Bhagavatam, Maya Sukha. Prahlad Maharaj, he calls it Maya Sukha. It's illusory happiness. When we say something is illusory happiness, what do we mean? Is it happiness or is it not? If I think I'm happy, can I testify as to my own state? You know, I'm happy. What makes it illusory happiness? Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, what do we say about a person who thinks he's happily married and his wife is always going out with another man and cheating on him and everything like that? You know, he says he's happy. So long as he's ignorant, when he finds out, then he looks back and he says, I thought I was happy, but instead I was a fool. I was living a lie. All these kinds of things that happen to people. Material happiness is like that. You discover in the event that it was really... And the trouble with material pleasure is it leads to suffering. And there is some feeling of pleasure because we want to be happy. Sometimes we just insist that we are. And we have various ways of telling ourselves that we're happy. You read the advertisements and you become convinced that if I have a Jaguar automobile, I'm happy. So you work very hard and you get a Jaguar. Therefore, I have this thought. Therefore, I'm happy, by definition. And I don't even look to see how I really feel about things. Because when I look to see how I really feel, everything I've worked for, and it's not really satisfying, I can't admit that. The one thing you notice with people in the material world who are pursuing pleasure or intensely enjoying, their enjoyment has this kind of, how do I say, driven quality to it. It's not relaxed, it's not carefree, it's very obsessive in their pursuit of pleasure. There's something wrong. So they taste this, and they think this must be it. It's like you say you've never really tasted good food your whole life. You've been fed on junk. And then one day you finally eat something really good. You say, ah, this is what it's supposed to be experiencing. I thought this was tasty, but actually this is really the real thing. So we're kind of dealing with shadows. Because we don't know any better, we also accept this as the real thing. And because it's not real, it doesn't ultimately satisfy us. And when we experience the real thing, we say, we recognize Krishna. This is who I was looking for. This is what I was wanting to see. So when there's Krishna consciousness, that's the exact, the very exact description. It is waking up. When you wake up, it's not you're, now you're in your natural state. It's not some artificial thing that comes in. So this is in the forest of material enjoyment. There are these snakes that swallow you and bite you and make you unconscious. So this is all a way of talking about this situation, and it gets worse. You fall and you become blind in a blind well. Like this, probably this one remains perpetually bitten by some animal. Perpetual sleep. You know, it means you don't know. Perpetual means goes on and on and on. And presumably there may be an end somewhere, but you can't see it. You don't know when it's coming. So devotees see this, and Prabhupada has given us the instructions that we should have some feeling for suffering humanity. He gave this direction. He told how he was ordered by his spiritual master, much to his surprise, to preach in the English language, which meant go to the West. This is a very famous old letter that Prabhupada got from the spiritual master. Prabhupada said, this is in 68, he was giving a lecture. And the disappearance there, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Los Angeles, and he said, now on this auspicious day of my spiritual master's appearance, I want to give you the same order he gave me. He says, now you've understood this Krishna consciousness to some extent. He says, you should have some feeling for suffering humanity. In other words, he took this very specific direction to preach in English to go to the West. Prabhupada made a little more general what it really means. You should have some feeling for suffering humanity. So Prabhupada was to go to the West where people are suffering, where the dream is maybe a little thicker, a little heavier, the matrix is more more encompassing. So you should go to the West. So that was his instruction, that we should become Krishna conscious ourselves, and that we should give Krishna consciousness to others. We have to wake up, and then we have to help others to wake up and assist them in this hellish blind and the blind well, suffering hellishly. Okay, any questions?
Yeah, sometimes I had the thought that maybe because political movement sometimes special instructions from spiritual instruction, we follow in a fanatic way, or we don't have really belief in understanding. And then I just think maybe if we look to India and the Indian culture, then we can learn from them. Because many Indians coming out, when you see the Indian people, they are, have some degree happy in household life, or they have lived their whole life as a little child, they already, you know, seeing the deities, and they are naturally in this Krishna consciousness. But we are always trying to be working hard to be Krishna conscious and pressing us and working like it.
So next birth? Next birth? Maybe it's natural then because they were born and raised that way. You have the advantage of next birth. Your parents are devotees and you're raised that way. Maybe it's not so, seem like an artificial imposition. So there's an advantage with Indian people. Some of it's quite natural. It's not foreign. It's not strange. Devotees don't freak them out. And various things like that. On the other hand, I always thought the East was the West was material and the East was spiritual, but I never met such materialistic people in my life as when I went to India. I have to say, even people who are like born devotees, it was just a shock to me. Part of it is the fact that if somebody like me who joins ISKCON, you know, I'm definitely, you know, I went to an Ivy League school. I could have become a member of the establishment. It wasn't that like I was destined to be, at least by all the social measures, deprived or disappointed in material life. It looks pretty good from that point of view. But I became a devotee. And immediately, as soon as I became a devotee, I lost all my status. I moved into a building with a lot of people I never had associated with people like this, and I never would voluntarily do it. I would just, they just weren't according to my taste. Anyway, you become a stranger in your own land. Everybody looks at you like, First time I went out in the streets in a dhoti and my head shaved, the secretaries were mean to me. People wouldn't look at me. Storekeepers wouldn't wait on me. I thought, oh, this one must be like to be a black guy. Oh God, it was such a shock to me. So when you become a devotee in the West, you lose your status, you lose your position, and no prospects for money or anything like that. ISKCON in India is not like that. As soon as you become a devotee in India, join ISKCON, your status goes up. It's probably this wonderful thing where ISKCON is so highly respected. In India, your status goes up. And if you come from some village and you join ISKCON, it may be that you can get a green card and come to the West, America or something like that. Now, if you have, India is a tough place. You may even have gotten what they call qualification. You've gone to college. You've got a college degree. Doesn't mean a thing. Little barber shops and bicycle sheds on the side of the road, all these people have college degrees that they still can't get a job, There's a huge, mismanagement is incredible. People can't make any advancement, they can't get anywhere. But you're born in some village, you don't even go to college, you join ISKCON, and suddenly, there's a prospect. And so, I saw that much to my surprise, that in some places like that in ISKCON, if you're in some big corporation in the West, everybody is trying to get ahead. If I win, someone else has to lose. And so sometimes I get very tricky with people in the business world. And I tell people I act like their friend, and then I do something that's going to really cause them some distress, so I will get ahead. I mean, I calculate, I make plots, I make schemes, I plan for other people's failures, I try to advance myself at the expense of other people. This is the business world. You know, this is, I mean, especially when lots of money at stake, is pretty ruthless. So I always thought, you know, anybody in ISKCON is giving up that stuff, that's why they come here. Not always. Not always. You know, it's not that everybody in India is like that, but they're really. And one reason I guess we can be a little more relaxed about money is because we have so much of it. You know, it's just, and the Indians who come to the West, they're all people who are like so dedicated now to, they've finally gotten somewhere. Because, I mean, India is such a mismanaged country. You meet somebody who is like a really talented person in some field or endeavor. Practically in India, they can't do anything. They come to the West, they become a big success. There's so many, I mean, overseas Indians, their achievements in business, science, is so big in the West, but not in India. And I sat down once with a whole bunch of Indian scientists, and they had this whole session about why this happens. Why this happens. I was there, one of the Hinduja brothers was having this whole session, with all these Indian scientists one evening in Bombay, and I was there. They started talking about this, and one of these Indian scientists pointed at me to say, you know, we can't talk, and this is, we're telling all our misgivings about ourselves, and he's a Western guy there. And Sri Chandanuji says, no, he's one of us. So they opened up. And their conclusion was that Indian people have trouble cooperating with each other. They cannot work together as teams. And that I don't know if it's true or not, but that. So anyway, it's very difficult. Whatever that, it may be that, it may be just the government. You know, they tax so much. Everyone has to be a criminal. I mean, it's just crazy. And it's so hard for people, so they want to come to the West, but they come to the West for material reasons. So I think that the Indian people have wonderful things to teach us, and they have things we should not learn from them also, because it's definitely not pure Vedic culture anymore. On the other hand, you know, if you can meet some Indian people. One of my early career in beginning Krishna consciousness, there was a man that came to our temple. This is very early. Not very many Indian people yet had come to America. I'll never forget, his name was Vikrama Bhargava. His family name was Bhargava. He was a Brahmin. Vikrama Bhargava. And he came to our temple and he invited me to his house. And so I went to some devotees to his house. We chanted and so on. And the first thing he told me is he's going back to India as soon as possible. Couldn't stand in America. And that just staying in that house for 5 hours, 4 hours, whatever it was they were all Brahmins, you know, and the atmosphere was so peaceful. There was a husband and wife, there were two children, I think. And I cannot describe it. I mean, it was just, you could see that there was a long, long culture of the moment of goodness. These people were so detached and so graceful. And I just never ever encountered anything like that. But they really were, somehow or other, they were a Brahmin family that somehow were still had Brahminical values, and they were practically, you know, they take it in with their mother's milk. Now if you find that, I don't think you find that anywhere but in India. There used to be families like that, something like that, close to it in the West, but not anymore, not for centuries. But I saw that. It was extraordinary. But the interesting thing was he couldn't stand Americans going back to India as soon as he could. I was really upset because I thought, this is somebody I want in my congregation, you know, this is a fantastic person. But he couldn't take it. So you have to be careful. Anything else? Yes?
Is mantra, you mentioned, is that known?
What is this?
The mantra.
For the snake, I don't know what it is. I think it's probably a secret. They pass it on to their sons or their disciples, you know.
Nothing from the Vedas.
Oh, it may be. Yeah, it could be because there's a whole, the whole Yajurveda is full of these kinds of mantras and things like that. I mean, I don't know where it comes from, but the Yajurveda is particularly, I think, yes, Yajurveda. It's full of kinds of mantras for doing various things and for cursing people and for blessing people and for healing and for all kinds of things. Yeah. There is a science of mantra. I mean, most people it looks like magic. But magic means you simply don't understand how it's done. Actually, this is someone else who said this. I'm quoting Arthur C. Clarke, a famous English science fiction writer, kind of a distinguished person. He says, any sufficiently advanced technology looks like magic. So we think that we're more advanced, but actually there is a more advanced technology that looks like magic to us. So because it's subtle and it deals with sound vibration, but if they have there's an understanding of the world where the more subtle things are, the more powerful they are, and all the elements evolved out of sound. Mm-hmm. All the gross elements evolved out of sound. So if you, on that basis, you understand how to deal in this way with sound, and you, I think to chant the mantras properly, you have to be in the right condition. Mm-hmm. If you do all the things, it works. There's a scholarly book in America called Understanding Mantras by a whole bunch of by a bunch of scholars, and it's really funny because they talk about all these different mantras. And he said that a study of mantras proposes a particular problem to the Western scholar. He says, we accept the Enlightenment consensus. From the Aufklärung, the whole worldview from the Enlightenment. We accept the Enlightenment consensus. We do not believe in magic. Most of us do not pray. So for these people, you know, it's casting spells, it's like fairy tales and witches and so on. But that, you know, you go to India, you can still see these people that do these things. I mean, there's these village healers that have some tradition that's passed down. In Vrindavan, everybody knows that there's this guy, if you have a high fever, this has happened so many times, he has a high fever. He comes and he takes some water and he gargles it and spits it on you and the fever goes away.
They call them prophets.
Some tantric thing, yeah. The tantric means a technique, yeah. There's really different techniques of it. Okay, we time to stop. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Jai.
Dangerous.